Dr. Gary Harper, who is a professor in the Department of Psychology and the director of the Master of Public Health program at DePaul University in Chicago, Illinois. He has been involved in various forms of adolescent-focused HIV prevention, treatment, research, advocacy, and community organizing for over 25 years, and conducts his health promotion work in both the U.S. and Kenya. Gary also addresses other areas of community health intervention, as well as the formation of community university partnerships to improve research and service delivery.
Well, thank you all for coming and staying here. It's always tough being the last one because people drift out. So, and hopefully you're all still awake too. If not, I have a really loud voice, so I'll just make sure you all can hear it in the back. So first I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Donald Tyler, April Timmons, Darnell Motley are all at DePaul with me, Joe Catania, Peggy Dolcini in Oregon State, and then Sheree Boyer at UCSF. And this work is funded through NICHD.
You make it go to the next one.
I have nothing to disclose, at least that I'm willing to talk about here. That was a joke, you were supposed to know. All right, background. So we know from prior research that the parents do play a central role in the sexual development of adolescents. A lot of the research that's been done really looks at mother-daughter communication. Some has looked at mother son communication, but the vast majority is really mother-daughter communication. So we know that mothers and daughters who talk about sexual activity have a later sexual debut. They're more likely to use condoms, contraception, things like that. A lot of the studies have not really looked at in depth at multiple family members. So it's really the mother. Very few have even looked at the father at all. And so we're really losing a lot of folks in this equation, especially given what we know about African-American families and adolescents, that the extended family can play a very critical role in the development and just the support of young African-Americans. So I think that some of the prior studies, although I think very critical and very needed and really serve a basis for a lot of intervention nowadays, have missed a critical piece. So what we wanted to do in this study is look at what messages do sexually active African-American adolescents receive from multiple family members regarding sexual and reproductive behaviors. So by multiple family members, we're looking at mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, grandmothers, grandfathers, female cousins, male cousins, and others if there are. And we had like some really funky names that they would come up with ones. All right, so methods. So this is drawn from a larger study examining gender ideologies and sexual and dating behaviors of African-American youth. For this sample that we're looking at of qualitative data, it's 51 African-American adolescents, 32 males, and 19 females. We looked at adolescents between ages of 15 and 17. The mean was about 16. For this analysis, it's only the sexually active. We had some youth that were not sexually active, but they're not included in this analysis. They were recruited from community-based youth-serving organizations in San Francisco and in Chicago, and we looked in neighborhoods. We were working in specific neighborhoods that had very high rates of STIs among African-American adolescents, and they were predominantly low-income neighborhoods. The instrument that we used, it was a semi-structured qualitative interview developed by the investigators on the study based on prior work we've been doing. One of the San Francisco communities, we've been working in that community since 93 and have done extensive work in that area. So we really used both existing literature, but then also used a lot of the methodologies that we've used in prior studies in these communities. And something that's not listed on here, all of our interviewers were to, as much as we could, gender matched. And then out of our four interviewers, three were African American and one was Filipino. In terms of the analysis, our work was guided by a psychological phenomenological framework, and so in terms of our coding and analytic procedures, we use a four-step procedure of content analysis, thematic analysis, coding refinement, and cross-case analysis. We really did this work in a very systematic and structured way. I think one thing a lot of times you see with qualitative data is people really challenge qualitative data is not being scientific as quantitative. And so we do use a very rigorous process using multiple analysts and coders, about four of us that work together on this data. And we spent hours and hours, those of you who do qualitative work know, hours and days and months and years doing this. So maybe not years, I lied a little bit. All right, so results. So we've got the family messages regarding sexual and reproductive behaviors were categorized into three primary thematic areas. One was sexual decision-making, quantity and quality of sexual activity, and then sexual health promotion. So what I'm going to do is run through each of these and then give you quotes. I really like to have the voices of the youth here as much as possible because it's really their lives that we're trying to capture, not my life. And so I'm going to try and represent them as much as possible through our quotes. So the first major thematic area of sexual decision-making, one of the themes under that was that the family members gave them messages about sex partners. This is from a 16-year-old male. My mom don't want me to bring a stunt home to her and say, this is my girl. She want me to bring home someone classy or someone that didn't have a lot of sex. So a stunt is kind of like a slut, a hoe, someone who is kind of loose, has a lot of sex partners, and is not seen as very, obviously, classy. Messages around decision-making and consequences of sexuality. So a 16-year-old female told us, you don't know what could happen. You could get pregnant. My mom says you don't have to have no kids and you don't have to be walking around with no STDs or HIV for the rest of your life. Also within sexual decision making, there were, under the major quote of our major theme of avoidance of sexual activity, we had a couple of sub-themes. So one is direct avoidance. So from a 15-year-old female, my mom used to say, don't ever let no boy pressure you into having sex if you don't want to. We also talked about avoidance behavior. Said you can like join in if you want and you know cheer or jump up and down. All right, avoidance. I appreciate it. That was nice. Avoidance of behaviors that suggest sexual desire. And this was really interesting. We called this indirect avoidance. So there are certain things that some of the parents would talk about or family members would talk about. You just don't do certain things because if you do those, you're going to give the person the wrong idea that you actually want to do something. So this one, I know one of my cousins. She's older. And she thinks she's almost 60. As I get closer to that, it's not that old. She always be saying, like, I'm on the phone and I'm around her, and it's like getting close to night time. So she got in her mind, shouldn't be on the phone with that boy. It's late because he might think something. So, you know, you shouldn't be talking too late at night because you're going to send him the wrong message of what you really want. Also within the avoidance of sexual activity, we had a sub-theme of taking control over sexual decision-making. And so in quotes like this, the R is the respondent and the I is the interviewer. Like everybody tells me, it's your decision where if you want to have sex or not have sex. Like that's what I've been hearing. And that's what I've been told and everything. That's why I just follow that, like if I want it or not. So the interviewer says, okay, who's told you this, that it's your decision? Mostly everybody, family and friends. Which family members? Most all of them. Very decisive young man there, I can say. All right. Also within sexual decision-making, parental monitoring. This is something that we've seen in a lot of different studies as well and confirmed. So here we have a 16-year-old female saying, if you ever feel like you're pressured to have sex and you think you want to have sex with some boy, the mom said, I can try my hardest to convince you not to have sex, but at the end of the day, that's something that you want to do. It's something you want to do. Just come talk to me so I can put you on birth control. And so I can talk to you and get someone else to talk to you about the risk there is. And I like that in her. It's always positive when people say nice things about their moms, right? And their aunties and their grandmas and their uncles. Also normative sex acts. And this is really interesting that, and this came up in a lot of different places where the family members define for young people what quote-unquote normal sex is. And it's very interesting that term normal sex comes out quite a bit. So this is a young man that was 15. I used to think anal sex was like normal sex, but I learned from my brother that ain't where you're supposed to put it. All right, that's where you're supposed to go. I guess I modified that a little bit. But all right, so then the second major theme had to do with quantity and quality of sex. So number of sex partners, my mom would rather me have sex with one person than two or three or nine or ten, and that was from a 15-year-old female. Also, there were the physiological aspects of sex, too. So this is a 17-year-old female. Then my sister will mention, she like, well, it really hurts. I'm like, I've actually heard that, but okay. Then if you said, wait, it hurts when you, then the respondent said, when you first have sex or something like that. She's like, it really hurts. And I'd be like, okay, bye. I don't care. Just go away. And then she'll keep talking about it. In this situation, I remember the sister was like really concerned about her, and she's kind of blowing her off, like, yeah, whatever, whatever. But still, she really talks about the significant impact that her sister had on her because she kept talking and talking to her, and some of it really did sink in enough that she told us about the messages from the sister. Under sexual communication, we had specific communication about birth control. So this is a statement from a 17-year-old male. Well, my cousin would tell me things I already know, like always wear condoms, see if she's on birth control, and similar stuff like that. And what else? That's probably it. So it's very interesting because there was a lot of talk about condoms, but then there's also a lot of talk about birth control, and I'll talk a little bit at the end about some of the gender ideologies that, you know, if you notice in this quote, it's making sure she's on birth control. So there's definitely this gendered behavior about you want to have the girl on birth control, the guy on the condom, and really very definitive lines there. There's also sexual behavior communication. So the sexual behavior communication was differentiated from the birth control communication. I mean, it's probably a lot of girls that would feel comfortable and talk about sex no matter what. But like a lot of girls I know, they wouldn't feel comfortable. But I think the only reason why I am so comfortable is because I've been around so many like males in my life, like my father, my cousin, my brother, with stuff like that. And being with the women I've been around, they've been comfortable. So I feel like it's nothing that I should be shy about or ashamed of. Then there was also a theme or sub-theme or major theme around pregnancy prevention behaviors. And part of that was effective use of birth control was one of the sub-themes. So this is a young woman, 15, on a trip. I guess she, the cousin, had her phone programmed to tell her when to take her pill or something. So we went down the hotel, halfway down the strip, and her phone just starts ringing. And she was like, oh no, we have to go back. And I was like, why? I gotta take my pills, you gotta go back. And I'm like, you're on vacation, why do you have to take them? She's like, no, you have to take them every day for this to work. I'm like, okay, go back. So that's a really, I think, powerful story of just a casual event between two cousins where she learned a great deal of information and this stuck with her about that. And so, you know, again, I think showing, you know, we're trying to show that there's multiple messages that occur in these interactions with family members. It's not all just sitting down and, you know, mom and daughter talking, but it's a lot of these kind of accidental almost conversations that occur. So also under pregnancy prevention behaviors, one is the effects of birth control. And so this is from a female. We wanted to show both a female and a male perspective on this. So the effects of birth control, okay, and what did you learn from your family? Same thing. You can set all different types, different ones, but they told me that birth control gives you different, like, reactions. Like some people gain weight, some lose weight, some people, I don't know. And then from a male, so tell me what you learned from your mom and from your dad. That she told me that birth control affects a girl's body. It changes her hormones and stuff like that. My dad just told me that your girl can't get, or there's more of a chance that she won't get pregnant on birth control. And again, you're seeing some of the gendered messages in there about what the mothers are saying, what the fathers are saying related to birth control. Also, there was disease prevention behaviors was another one of our themes under the sexual health promotion, kind of larger area, content area. Okay, what did you learn from home? To definitely use one, meaning a condom, so you don't have no babies or no disease or nothing like that. Now who? My mother and my sister. And then sexual health maintenance behaviors too. And this was good to see too, that there was at least some discussion around kind of just general sexual health and promoting or thinking of ways to continue to have sex. So from your cousins, sisters, and aunties, what did you learn about how a girl should carry herself? And with this, earlier in this section of the text, she was talking about her cousins, sisters, and aunts. They should carry themselves respectable and basically like a young lady. What does that mean, carry yourself like a lady? Like hygiene stuff and keep yourself up. If you have sex, get on birth control, use douches, go to the doctor. You and your sex partner get a checkup and stuff like that and use condoms. So I think, you know, in this message we see a lot of just, it's not always just like freaking out about, I think I got something and I go to the clinic, but being prepared and thinking about being sexually healthy in a more general way, in a general perspective. So what does this all mean? One thing that we saw is that there are various different family members that discuss an array of sexual related factors. It's not just moms, it's not just dads. In another analysis we did, we have a paper looking at dating related behaviors too, where we saw similar findings, and we saw that there were a lot of messages that came from cousins, for instance, and there were a lot of messages that came from aunties. And so, you know, I think a lot of times when we're only looking at mother-daughter communication, you know, in that we leave out the male, but then we also leave out a lot of really critical relatives who play a significant role. The majority of the messages are protective. So we see that the, you know, family members are looking out for their the children and their family. And they do reflect very traditional gender ideologies. We're doing further analysis of this to look at which messages came from males, which came from females. Are there certain ones that are only received by males, certain ones that are only received by females, and then are certain ones that are generated only by males and generated only by females. In some of our dating work, we do see that the types of messages that are only male-generated are different than those that are only female-generated. And with the dating, it had the males had a much more protective kind of function than some of the female messages. Other messages communicate appropriate sexual behavior. So, you know, youth are learning about what it means to be a sexual being through these family members. And then health-related messages are not always medically accurate. As you probably notice a few little things in there. And this is, you know, so of concern, because if this is where you're getting your primary sexual information and you're getting the wrong primary sexual information, then that's going to stick with you throughout your sexual life until you learn otherwise. So we see that the, in terms of, you know, what can we do with this for intervention, we see that there's an array of these messages that are coming from family members, and that we really need to get multiple family members engaged in our interventions. I think that, you know, there's attempts at times to get parents involved in interventions, but we really need to think outside of the box. And maybe it's cousins and sisters and brothers. And, you know, and two, just because someone's a sister, she may play a maternal role. You know, you may have a sister that's 15 years older than you that raised you, or you may have an auntie that is your age. And you may be peers in school. So we have to, I think, get out of this idea of this very kind of, you know, hierarchical model of how families look and the way that they function. We need to facilitate more communication between youth and family members, although they're doing a lot of it. You know, and again, it's not all just, I'm going to sit down to you and talk to you about sex. You know, it's you're going down the street and you got to go take your pill. Or you see something on TV and that sparks a conversation. I think we need simultaneously health education from family members and youth. So maybe more interventions where family members and youth maybe have some section of the intervention that are separate, where they can be learning things, and some that are together. That model's been used some in mother-daughter communications, but I haven't seen it so much expanding beyond that. I think health education of family members could positively affect youth who aren't directly involved in the intervention. One thing that we heard too is that a lot of times, you know, kids are hanging out at people's house, and we all know the neighborhood where there was the mom that, you know, everyone hung out at their house and she had good food, or, you know, had nice cookies, or, you know, she had the nice TV, or the cousin or the auntie or whoever that they stay at their house. So really it can go beyond just the direct relative to the youth and their peer groups and to other young people that are hanging out with a variety of family members. And that's it. Thank you.